You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So, with the US presidential election looming just around the corner, I wanted to look into the issues that are important for American voters this year, how the pandemic might impact the election results, and whether the echo chambers of social media have played a role in controlling voter discourse this year. I spoke to lecturer of political science at the University of Waikato, Justin Phillips, about these issues. Justin is an expert in politics and the media and US politics. He was actually one of my lecturers in my time at university. So it was great to speak to him. I began by talking a little bit about the issues that are important to American voters this year. The presidential election in the United States is a long anticipated election, it feels like. What are the key issues facing American voters this year?
In some ways, the issues are the same, right? So the economy is always, almost normally, the major issue that Americans consider when they go to the polls. And this election is actually no different. So roughly three quarters of Americans are deeply interested in the economy as their primary factor for what they're choosing for their vote and so forth. With all that said, we exist in a COVID era, and it's quite obvious that this is another important aspect to the 2020 election, just like in our election as well, most recently. But what's sort of so fascinating about this is who actually considers this to be an issue. So, for example, Democrats in the United States, registered Democrats, about 82% or so consider COVID to be this really important issue. Contrast that with Republicans that consider only about 24% of them consider COVID to be an important issue. And so that major partisan split is something that's really quite fascinating from a political science perspective, because in some ways it sort of reflects your views towards what the existing reality, what you want for the future, and how this is all going to factor into your vote going forwards. There's also the typical stuff with healthcare and the Supreme Court. We're actually just in the midst of, I believe, the Senate is voting on Amy Coney Barrett right now. Foreign policy, these sorts of things are all major issues. But in my view, the economy and COVID-19 is the major issue. And I think that shouldn't really come as a surprise to most.
Just following up with that, you said of registered Republicans, it's 24% believe that COVID's a big issue. That doesn't feel like a huge number of people to consider a global pandemic a very relevant issue to an election. Why do people not think that it's important?
Well, I think there's a whole host of factors involved with this, but it sort of starts at the top. President Trump is quite clear that the United States is turning the corner, to use his phrasing, and that it's time to open up. The cure can't be worse than the problem and the disease and so forth. This type of language sort of insinuates that COVID-19 is not an issue that the United States needs to care about going forwards. And that sort of leadership falls down or distills down to the electorate. So I suppose to that degree, one might not really be so surprised by the fact that Republicans or registered Republicans don't consider it to be a major issue, because the leader of their party and the leader of the free world in many instances has outlined this. I mean, one needs to only look at the fact that he himself was infected with COVID-19 and now he's out doing rallies, right? So this sort of all builds together in a package that outlines that it's not really a major issue.
We're going to see the results in a week from about today, but how is the public likely to respond to either result? What do you think the reaction might be in the public backlash from either Joe Biden winning the position or Donald Trump winning the position again?
The second bit that you sort of outlined is this idea of sort of potential backlash and response from voters and so forth. And one of the sort of primary concerns of Americans, I think it's roughly around 7 in 10 Americans, are actually afraid that there's going to be violence after Election Day. And they, sadly, have some evidence to back up this concern. So there was a spate of recent polls surrounding whether partisans in the United States support any sort of violence in order to achieve certain political goals. And that number has steadily been rising. Now, I've seen it sort of vacillate back and forth between the most recent polls, but I saw a YouGov poll recently which showed that roughly 30% of Republicans, I don't want to say 36% of Republicans and 33% of Democrats, actually believe that just even a marginal amount of violence is actually acceptable to achieve your political goals. And that seems to be an outlier, because I've seen that figure sort of fall around the 15% from other studies. But that sort of outlines that there is a select group in the United States that actually believes that violence is acceptable in order to achieve your political goals. And so when we see riots in the aftermath of protest movements, we see white supremacist groups using this as an opportunity for what we describe as accelerationism, you know, trying to start a second civil war and so forth. All of this points to the head that, in essence, there's a potential for violence. And to be perfectly frank with you, it's something that I'm actually quite worried about as well. You know, that it's looking like it's possible. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question,
yeah.
But it's sort of something that I'm worried about.
Yeah, and I imagine even after seeing what has happened even in this year with the Black Lives Matter movement and various, you know, rallies for that and police backlash and, as you said, white supremacist backlash as well, that it does feel like it is a likely scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always careful when I approach this because we exist in completely different media worlds. So some of us will be talking about Black Lives Matter as a genuine protest movement in the aftermath, not just of George Floyd, but others as well, trying to outline systemic issues of racism in the United States and so forth. Right? This was discussed in the presidential debate about the talk that every African-American family has with their children surrounding police and so forth. But others look at this same movement and they see, frankly, radical, violent terrorists that are trying to overthrow a country, both culturally, socially, and politically as well. And so it's this sort of thing which leads to further violence, so this potential for violence. I think, if nothing else, we can look at these sort of instances and see it as sort of wedge issues, or that become sort of wedge issues where people look at the same concern and see completely different problems with, you know, really no solution.
Viewing one thing as sort of a different version of a movement, do you think that is affected by the way people are interacting on social media as well, that a lot of these things have been organized on social media, discussions are going on in social media because people are stuck inside their homes, they're not talking to their friends in person as often and are talking over the internet?
I think you touched on a really important point. That in no time in recent history have we had so much access to information, but so very little freedom in our everyday lives. And so one, sort of from a New Zealand perspective, one needs to only look at our experiences in lockdown, our frustrations with lockdown, as a means or a lens of understanding what's going on in the United States. You know, they've been in and out of some form of lockdown, depending on where you live in the U.S., for months now. You know, only, and I'll use that term very carefully, went through 4 weeks and 3 weeks if you're in Auckland. So there's that frustration level that sits there, right? We have a whole bunch of animosity in the system that exists already. But then we mix in the social media aspect, something that you've just pointed upon. And there's sort of actually differing views of this in the literature from a political science perspective. You know, the typical one that you and I know that you have heard this, but others have heard this as well, this concept of echo chambers, that we sort of just exist in our own carefully curated environment. We're given the information that we want, that we agree with by way of algorithms and our own self-choice and so forth. And that has, you know, obvious potential negative consequences for society. You know, we exist in two different realms, right? But then there's other views. There's views that maybe the internet and social media provide this unique opportunity for people to be exposed to disagreement, and that could be a potentially a good thing. So you mentioned about people not being able to talk to each other in a personal aspect, but you know, you might be more political than others. More often than not, people tend to avoid these hot topics with each other, and so the internet is a space where you can reach these topics of disagreement in a potentially more safe environment. You know, think about talking about political issues or religious issues over the dinner table, right? These are the no-no discussions that we try to avoid to keep the calm, so to speak, right? So the internet sort of and social media presents this unique opportunity, but it's such a paradox in the way that we use it.
I then went on to ask Justin about whether the swing to the left we've seen in New Zealand is something that could happen in the US this election.
So this is a bit of a tricky one to answer. I think one, so the easiest way to answer this would to look at something like the national level polling, right? Because it's an indicator of whether there is going to be like this left wave or blue wave or not. And so far, the race has been really quite static at the national level. That is the 2020 general election in the U.S., presidential election, rather. So we have, you know, it's roughly around a plus 10 to plus 8 sort of national level lead for Biden, depending on, you know, the day, the week, and so forth, and, you know, major events and all of this sort of stuff. And that's been relatively stable for months now. So what's how that sort of eventuates is into all these battleground states. And Biden sees a relatively stable lead in many of these battleground states as well, like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, you know, these critical states which Hillary Clinton lost by 70,000 votes or so. So in essence, there's, how would you put this? There's, from a polling perspective, a really strong probability that Biden ends up winning this election. You know, I think 538 has an 85 to 15 for Biden. So this is the probability that Biden wins. And how the electorate operates is that there's coattails. So if the president wins, generally they're going to be winning a great deal number of seats in the House. Now the Senate operates differently, but this is where we see a potential for a wave. So for example, in 2018, I think it was Democrats were plus 7 in the polls. And in 08 and 06, they're around plus 10 and so forth. So we can see that sort of level of a potential for a wave, much like sort of what we saw in New Zealand. Now, your listeners are going to be listening to me and saying something like, well, what about Hillary Clinton? She was up, you know, by somewhat similar, and Biden has a larger lead, but she was up by these numbers in a somewhat similar sense in battleground states. But there's a critical difference here. So I don't know if your listeners are aware or if you're aware, but 60 million people have already voted in the U.S. This is a historic early vote, and this is something that we can link back to New Zealand because we saw something similar. I think roughly 2 million people voted early in New Zealand, in contrast to roughly around 1 million that voted early in 2017. In other words, it looks like, for one, people have already made up their minds. But also there's an incentive in a COVID era to utilize mail-in ballots. So 40%, I think it's 40 million of those 60 million have been mail-in or absentee ballots. So what this means is that the polls don't just indicate what might occur on election day. They indicate what's actually happening right now. And so that gives sort of maybe some further evidence to suggest that it's not just a potential for a blue wave occurring on November 3rd in the United States. It might be occurring right now as we speak.
Being able to vote earlier, has that been, obviously in New Zealand, the 2-week voting early, it was a unique to the history of New Zealand elections, but is that something similar in the States, that people have had a longer period to be able to vote early than perhaps in the past, or is this similar because of COVID-19, or is this the same
depends.
As normal?
It depends. Some states are more open to early voting than others. In New Zealand, we have a relatively quick and painless voting process. You know, we don't generally wait in line, we're given a pen, we vote, and get it done within 5 minutes, for example, right? 10 to 15 minutes, max, you'd say, right? But all one needs to look is at places in, even in New York and Florida, in these large electorates where people are waiting in line for hours to vote. It sort of demonstrates it's not just a fact about the a factor that people have the ease to vote or the opportunity to vote. It's that they have the enthusiasm to wait in line for hours to vote. And we saw this in 2008 in Florida, for example. Then Senator Obama won the state of Florida off the back of people waiting in line for hours to vote. And I think we're seeing something similar to that here. So what I would caution that it's just because of this option or availability in some states that people are now able to vote earlier, just like in New Zealand. It's more about that enthusiasm which is driving these early voting numbers, I would say.
That was University of Waikato politics lecturer Justin Phillips speaking on some of the issues surrounding the US presidential election this year.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.